Welcome to the Big Black Clock Podcast, the wrist-tickling world of urology, brought to you by the dynamic duo of two Montreal watch enthusiasts.
Enjoy dad jokes and bed puns as we deep dive into new releases, trends, reviews, and everything watch-related. Now sit back and rest assured you'll have a good time.
We are live. You are now joining us live. You're actually live. Not even joining us live. This is a recorded, pre-recorded.
Nobody's joining us and we're not live.
This is a pre-recorded podcast, but we are live. It's a nice sunny day. Dimitri, how the hell are you?
I'm okay. But I feel like we're always live.
Yeah.
Whenever we are doing anything in real time.
Except when I have that Ferris Bueller kind of statue thing here and it's all AI that's speaking on my behalf. That's the future. In fact, did you see that people are doing job interviews and it's like the questions are being asked and literally like generative AI is just spitting out answers? It's just like...
Yeah.
It's pretty intense.
It's an interesting topic. It's you know, I'm curious to see how different the world will be in like 5 years.
Yeah.
It's progressing so quickly. And, you know, those tools are integrated so much more now into different fields. We could have a whole podcast just about that. It's quite interesting. I'm using those tools all
the time. We now put in Copilot in our Microsoft suite. We use it in GitHub. It has a lot of advantages, if well used.
Oh, yeah. But and again, it's like anything, right? You kind of have to know how to use it to make sure you get the proper, correct results. But once you want to learn how to use those tools, you can leverage your work.
I think the last thing I would say is that while everything has its like downsides and people make the critiques, remember, AI or these models are that the dumbest that they will ever be. This is the infancy. This is as stupid as it be. As it only gets better from now. That's what's crazy. Or more sharper. Yeah. Anyways, how the hell are you? You good?
I'm excellent. But just one more thing. You know, I read somewhere on Reddit, somebody made a cool comment that there's a like, kind of a concept or theory that we are in like in a feedback loop with AI right now because AI is now making us better at making AI better.
Yeah. Chicken and the egg.
Which is crazy. Yeah. So... Anyways,
but there, and that's why they call it, there's poisoning, it's called model in those models. It's called poisoning. You got to be careful because a lot of them will try to be discredited through poisoning of their data.
We have to learn to control how much we give to AI.
Well, this new one, this new company,
otherwise people are just shells without any knowledge or learning. Right?
This company, the model itself has to be like, there has to be voted, there's votes in terms of how it continues to learn. This is the one I think Sam Altman, the person was part of generative AI, and he left. AI, he was when they temporarily fired Sam Altman. This was the guy that they were potentially going to sell the company to. I forget the name. I heard it in the news this week. Anyways, did you watch the Grand Prix?
Yeah.
I was wondering, did you watch the Australian Grand Prix
last week? Yeah, I did, and I actually was fun for the first time in many
I agree. That's what I was asking. Prix, yeah.
Right. And I was like, because it was in Australia, so it was at night. I recorded it. I was going to watch it in the morning. So I started watching it. I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to fast forward through the whole thing. I don't care watching like most of it because it's the same. It's one guy in front and the rest are just trying to chase for and fight for the second place. And then he crashes like right away. Well, crashes. He car dies. Like there's an issue with the brakes or something. And then I'm like, ooh, I'm going to watch this now. This is interesting.
Yeah,
this is going to be a proper fight. But you know what? Honestly, like for the benefit of the sport, I feel like they need to do something to equalize the playing field. Because I like again, it's just my own perception, but like I'm losing interest in F1 because to me, I'm like I don't care to watch it. I know who wins every time.
Yeah, there was
There's no competition.
I think it was like that for a while when Hamilton had Mercedes. At one point, it was just like untouchable. And then for the last little while, I think Red Bull's just, you know, to run away with it. I think we were also treated to probably the most exciting season ever in F1. Like when they went down to literally that last lap, the controversy. And like, that was a crazy season in general.
Michael Massey got fired after that for that decision. Yeah. So, but anyways, I mean, Verstappen still deserves the win, right? He won after that again and again. So,
I don't think that season should have gone to him, but just myself, because they changed the rule. I was like, yeah, it was the wrong fucking rule if they just kept those
maybe
cars.
They also didn't want to give another championship to
Hamilton
because he would surpass Schumacher's number of championships.
It'd be kind of interesting if next year he gets a good car with Ferrari and he's able to break Schumacher's record with Ferrari. That'd be cool.
Yeah, Audi's coming in next year, I think, as well.
Also very cool. Yeah. They shouldn't do. I don't think they'll be great off the bat, but we'll have to see what kind of engine they bring to the table and how that they're able to.
But I do like the concept of major league sports, where you know there's a harder limits on how much you can spend,
right.
And it equalizes the playing field for everybody, and it's more fun to watch because occasionally you have you have 5-6 years when the team is good, and then it goes back to being not amazing because they at that point all of the superstars.
If you can draft well
at their peak, and then they're expensive, so they can't hold them. But then you know it depends a lot on the draft. Like I get it. Let's say in European sports, like soccer, especially in soccer leagues, like it's always the same teams that win, and it sucks because if you are like a lifelong fan of I don't know like Leicester City,
Everton
in England,
yeah,
like Leicester City won once, right, and that was amazing, but it was like crazy. Outlier, but like now he's not gonna win for another I don't know 20 years at least.
But it's so like there's this I was watching this video, this guy's a fan of the Mets. If anyone watches American baseball, they're just it's tough being a fan of the Mets. Let's just say it that way, right? And he was like, so what he was, we do great player development, we're excellent with pitchers, we're really good at getting them off the ground. He goes, what's the worst part about being a Mets fan? He's like, probably the months of like April to September, which is like the whole season. It's like it's the most miserable part of being a Mets fan. Because we have good player development. Anyways.
Yeah, like in hockey, it's a good example because you have, you know, like 15 years ago, you had like Anaheim, San Jose, Chicago, Pittsburgh. They were amazing.
Yeah.
Right? For many, many years. Because they had the greatest picks, right? They had the Patrick Kane, the Sidney Crosbys. Now they're at the bottom.
They're at the bottom.
Because they lost all those guys, and those guys are, I mean, close to retiring. They're
comes
expensive.
They couldn't afford to rebuild.
Yeah, exactly. And then you have other teams that are killing it.
Yeah. Like but once you win your championship, you're good for the next while. You get your bragging rights for at least the next 10, 20 years. Yep. All right. Let's go into it. You know, we were going to do a subject this week, but there's a lot of releases, and we saw some interesting items in the news. So I think we're also preamble. We have topics in the backlog, but, you know, Watching Wonders is right around the corner, and it's going to be bombing. And some of, in a good way, not a bombing, but it's going to be, I'll say, bussing. But before we jump into some of the news and some of the interesting releases.
Dimitri, how the hell are you?
How are you? No, what are you wearing?
Oh, I'm wearing a nice, beautiful outfit for all of the listeners out there that are, you know, curious about that question. You know, amazing, just jogging pants and a t-shirt.
And what are you wearing on your wrist?
Okay, so new release. I just got it and I'll post it. Well, at this point, because we're recording in advance, this is already on the Instagram. I finally got the Spinnaker Second Fluce. I think it's Fluce, the name of the watch, which is an homage to Blanc Payne's 50 Fathoms. And the Second did in a version, which I actually liked. I thought it was quite clever. They called it 50 Phantoms. So it's a cool looking watch. It has, and I actually counted, and I know maybe I'm not good at counting, or other things as well.
Spelling or running fast.
Or running fast or thinking quickly, you know.
Damn it, you can eat.
I can eat. I can transfer food from one state to another
exactly.
From my body very quickly. So I counted 49, including the ghost on the back on the open case back. But again, I'm not a doctor, so I'm not good at counting.
No.
But anyways, so this watch is cool. Like we saw it first, and when we went to a wind up in New York in October.
Yeah,
this was the first. It was the release that was a limited edition. That you know, first come, first serve. The actual second release. I think there was two color variations. I think this one was also two color variations. And then they sold so much so quickly and oversold and had to cancel people's older orders. I was one of those people because I initially wanted to buy and I was quite disappointed because I paid, then I got a refund, then I got another email that it was available. I paid again, got another refund. But every time I did the transaction, because of the currency conversions, I got a bit less. My bank gave me less money. And I called my bank after, hats off to my bank. I called my bank, I explained the story. They're like, okay, look, it's not your fault. We'll give you the money back. Like they just gave me the difference back.
Yeah.
Right, because it's purely the
but
the
you still
fees,
have to call the bank,
conversion.
Spend your time doing that, etc.
Yeah,
blah, blah, blah,
and
right.
I and obviously I, like they were nice, but they didn't have to do it. So
right.
that was probably the main issue that I had with that. But look, the thing that they did because of such a crazy demand, like literally maybe a week or two after or something like that, they announced that they will do a limited edition release again, but slightly different, meaning that instead of a specific number of orders, they will open a window of, I don't know, like 10 hours or something. I can't remember, 24 hours. And they would accept as many orders as they would receive and then make that many watches. So I ordered one. There's also two versions. They called it slightly different. It's the second blue edition. Mm-hmm. There are two color variations, the one with the navy dial and the one with like a super pastel, like a very light blue. I got that one because I thought it was a bit more original, interesting. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, I didn't get the exact numbers. The initial release that they were planning to do, I think they sold like 500 copies or something total.
Yeah, it was 500 units.
The
yeah.
one after that, they were accommodating all of the people that they couldn't get it. It sold like
I think
over
that one
2000.
Was like we're opening a window for this long.
Yeah.
People push your orders. How many did they sell?
I think it was over 2,000. So like
Good
four
Lord.
Times plus more. Yeah. Anyways, I got it
Bravo.
This week. I got it so quickly, like in 2 days from Hong Kong. Like amazing.
DHL.
No way with FedEx. Like build quality. This watch is fantastic. Like for 350.
It's a fun watch.
Yeah. And I honestly, yeah. this was me an exercise as well on getting something that looks like 50 fathoms to see if I would like the way it looks and feels. I like it. It's a great watch. I love the crown on this watch. Like I'm a huge fan
of
those.
Glad that you said that. And I'm glad you're wearing that watch because there was a release this week we'll talk about in a minute that was also probably what everyone's been waiting for around the 50 fathoms.
Just like the Nevada Gretchen, and I know Spinnaker is known for like homages as well, right? Just like the Nevada...
For some.
Yeah, some, not sure. Not as much as... Yeah. What's the other one I was thinking of, though?
They're not so blatant. They make a lot of their own watches, but they're big, ostentatious, yeah. and they're colorful. And,
well, yeah, this yeah, one, yeah, yeah. I mean, this one you have to... This is really an homage to... 50 fathoms. But anyways.
But it's not an homage because homages are fine, the ones that come out of AliExpress. They call it an homage. It's a copy. This has a bezel that kind of looks like it. It's got 50 ghosts on the dial.
I agree because this is a sequence of conditions. I totally agree with you. And then when I, you know, I'm not, I don't mean like a replica. I mean an homage, which is like an ode to,
I think it's,
to
proper homage.
Yeah, it is a proper watch. And I have to say that just like the Nevada Gretchen, the build quality on this thing is outstanding. It feels like a multiple, like a $1,000+ watch. Just the case quality.
Yeah.
It does have the Seiko NH 35. It's fine, right? Like it's fine. It's not, and I think this is where, we talked about this before, this is where I think Seikon shines, is collabs with affordable watches that in itself are not necessarily works of art, and the Seikon work will enhance it.
Make it fun.
Yeah, make it fun.
Yeah, yeah.
So
gives it a good
flair.
I think
this is a good combo. I like the idea of 50 Fathoms because it's a good conversation starter. And look, it's a 42mm case. It's a pretty thick watch. Open case back. NH35 is nicely decorated still because they put a ghost on the rotor. It's great. The crown is beautiful. Everything is very smooth and flush. Like let's say when you even do the bezel rotation, there's no give. It's like it's very well it's precise. I'm a fan. Yeah. I really like this, and I like what Spinnaker is doing. Yeah,
wear it in good health.
Yeah,
I am wearing. I'll go with a diver as well. Seiko, 00 SKX
07.
So on the original rubber strap, chunky rubber strap. It's awesome. This was the made in Japan. Very happy. Fun watch to wear around the house.
Is this the one that you've had for a long time or something recent?
I went as soon as they announced that they were discontinued. I bought both of them, one in made in Japan and blue, 007 and 009. And I got the Jingyi Jangli Jubilee as well. Even have the 011, which is the orange dial one, which is awesome. Awesome.
Yeah.
Let's get into the news real quick. And I think I'm going to start with this one because I was reading about it, about a specific lawsuit that's happening in the United States against the luxury brand of Hermès. Hermès, also one of the bigger brands of fashion houses, is a watchmaker unto itself. It has some really, how could I say, they're innovating quite a bit. They're getting rid, kind of like Louis Vuitton, of some of their cheaper stuff. They're becoming legit players, I would say, in the watch market. What they're getting sued for, there's a civil action suit against them, specifically around the Birkin bag. And what they're being accused of, which I think is the biggest problem, is they're being accused of something called bundling, where they are forcing people, or they're kind of like positioning themselves as saying, look, if you want this bag, you need to buy other items from our store. And this is where also it gets a little bit dangerous, is apparently when you're selling a Birkin bag at Hermès, sales associates don't make any commission. But what they're accusing them is they've been forced to buy items that don't sell very well that actually as well bring commission to the sales associate. And I think that as well is where it's a little bit treacherous and is dangerous. And I don't know, I hope this probably sounds familiar to people out here. I mean, I was listening to another podcast this week that was talking specifically around this. And, you know, you take a brand like, I don't know, Patek, Langenzahn, you want an Odysseus, they're going to make you get a bunch of stuff. And the reason I'm saying Langa is because AP or all the APs that aren't selling, go buy a bunch of this before you can even have a chance of buying this. And there's no guarantee either. So the idea is what I'm saying is that this is in the US. What does this mean? If ever this does see the light of day or comes to a specific conclusion, I mean, what does that mean for potentially the watch brands that I think we all agree this is kind of like a standard practice? You have to have a buying history. They have to know who you are. And they're actually going to tell you, listen, you have no shot at getting this Daytona unless you buy some other stuff here. And it's messy because we're talking about a specific brand. What about these retailers that have multiple brands? Say, yeah, buy all these Omegas so you can get that Rolex. Or you know what I mean? The stuff that's not selling and there's no guarantee to it. And they kind of own all of the retail, the wholesale vertical of it. It's a dangerous, I think, precedent. I don't know where I stand on. I think that they're certainly allowed to do certain things, but I also think based on how the market is going, there are people that are getting the short end of the stick. I think there are a lot of people that are, not say getting screwed, but definitely, yeah. What are your thoughts on this, Dimitri? I saw this in the news. I thought it was interesting for the watch community.
It is very interesting, and I don't necessarily have like a particular stance because I think it's a topic that could be easily, you can swing one way or the other depending on the arguments you present. I will, let's say, approach it from like the capitalist view. The reason for that, right, is because obviously the demand far exceeds the supply,
right,
of those bags. And that's the reason for the crazy prices. That's the reason for difficulty to get them. And let's say when the company has a limited amount of production, and let's assume that they do in this case, right? What tools can they use to make sure that they can, let's say, sell those bags to in a more fair fashion? Let's say if your demand is so high that people are willing to pay more money, why would you not leverage that as a company, as a business, right? Of course you would, right? How do you maintain, let's say, the high prices? Is to, well, first of all, if you get to the point where the prices are very high, then it reduces the number of people who can afford those bags in the first place. So it's a different type of clientele immediately, right? But then even that is not enough because among those clientele, who do you prioritize? Well, probably the people who will come back and buy something else.
Or who have already bought something.
Oh, well, yeah.
That may have given you commission. I think that's where it's messy, right?
It is messy. But let's say if the lawsuit is presented as in people are forced to buy things, people are not forced to buy anything. I don't think they are forced. They can go buy a bag of a different brand. They can do it on their own. And I'm pretty sure when they're buying those bags, they're not promised anything. They're right. Saying, well, look, you'll probably go up in the queue and you have a high chance of getting just like the Rolex, just like the Porsche cars, right? Or Ferraris, whatever. And then potentially when there's a new batch coming up, you will get the call, right? I don't obviously know, let's say, all of the details of how that works on that side. And then I think with Rolex, let's say if you're a celebrity of a specific level, you can just go into a store and then they will sell you whatever you want.
Yeah.
But again, that's because they want for you to wear the watch. It's a win-win. It's a business. So I, to be honest, from that perspective, I don't see an issue with how they do those things. If I was in charge, I would probably do the same.
Yeah. And I think that Audemars Piguet, these people, they're all watching this case with great interest, I'm sure.
And then if you look at the other perspective, in defense of people, if they sell it to anybody, well, let's say first time, first serve, how do they control it?
Right.
And obviously, if that's the case, then I don't know if the prices will stay for the same as they are. So it's, I don't know, it's an interesting, I'm curious to follow this lawsuit. It's interesting to see how it goes. But I think I'm probably leaning towards the side of, it's a business. They're there to maximize profits. That's kind of the the goal of every business that exists.
I think there's got to be something in between as well. If you gain a monopoly in the specific market, there has to be some, it can't be a free-for-all under sales practices.
I agree when it comes to monopolies, but this isn't. This is a company that makes purses, right? Also, so there are other companies that make purses. They're not the monopoly in this case. Like, I totally agree with the monopolies in those cases. Like, maybe we can talk about Amazon at some point, because Amazon, they have to be controlled.
But I think it is a monopoly in the sense that the Birkin handbag is only sold by specific Hermes boutiques. There's no fair game between different retailers on how they're managing their sales practices. Here it's Hermes saying, look, it's going to be our way on how these bags are sold in our stores. You cannot buy it online. You need to come in with a specific history. We need to know you, and we make the decision. So they kind of have a monopoly on that front, right? I think that's where there's a bit of concern here. And I think Rolex is trying to fix that, but they were selling other watches, but their purchase of Booker now gives them pretty much control of the whole vertical between their manufacturing, between their wholesaling, and even the retailers that are going to, but the main retailer, because they're not the only retailer. Not all Rolex is sold at Rolex shops or Booker. There are some at other authorized dealers as well. So there, I think that's where you have that kind of competitive practice. But some Audemars Piguet is just sold right in the Audemars Piguet shop and nowhere else, not even an authorized dealer. It's like you have to go to that boutique.
Right.
So maybe that's where they need to, I think there's somewhere there that they need to kind of make sure that there's no abuse. I think at one point during the market in the last couple of years, it's been abusive. They've been able to gouge the prices, corner the market. You see watches come in and they're immediately on the secondhand market, immediately on the gray market. And you go, come on. I mean, someone knew someone, they get in there and they're all cutting into the price. And the only one who suffers is the consumer.
Yeah. And it's a hype. And it's this whole hype kind of, I guess, not fashion, but like the concept of the hype watches, hype stuff, right? And I'm not even knowledgeable about the clothes aspect, but like there's a thing, and I mean, we'll talk about it in a second, about the Moons watches. Let's say when people are releasing clothes from, like they do what they call a drop, and it's like some sneakers from Nike that are like limited editions, people are lining up. Again, as soon as they walk out of the store, if they buy it, they try to sell them for multiples of what they paid for. It's so interesting concepts, and I think we can dedicate a whole episode about this stuff. I'm still leaning towards even the Booker. Rolex did this because, first of all, they offered authentic used watches certificate kind of with the Booker.
Also, Rolex certified pre-owned.
Yeah, sorry, certified pre-owned. That's what I was looking for. And so they did that first, and then they bought out the Booker. I think they honestly did it because they just wanted to get into the used market because the prices are so good. So I don't see that Rolex trying to do something nice for the people, you know?
Also, Booker. Well, I think it's going to make it harder for the folks at Booker that Rolex owns, for them to start saying, look, we're going to, once they give these watches to the retailer, say, let's call them, you know, Bob's shop or whatever. I'm making something up. So Bob's shop then gets the watch. They can do whatever they want once Rolex gives them the watches. In this case, it'll be a little bit more control to say, well, what does your guest list or your short list look like? How can we try to make this a little bit fairer? I think as well, I think they did it not only for that, but now that they sell Omegas or any other brand of watch in Booker, they make like percentage points off that because they're the retailer now too, which is pretty dope for the Rolex.
Yep.
All right. So that was a big piece of the news. I thought it was interesting. I think we should be watching it with interest to see what happens because it could change the name of the game, at least in the US, on how they do certain practices. Will watch brands adapt or will they just say, no, fuck this route? And not only watch brands, all luxury brands. They might be like, no, we're not going to do this. The reason I'm saying watch is because outside of the Birkin bag, there are, I'm sure, a few fashion articles or items that have this type of exclusivity. But we see it particularly in the watch brands. We see it particularly in these ADs and how you have to foster a relationship before you can even be considered on the list. What is this list? Where is it? Is it official? No. It's who likes you most kind of thing. Yeah.
Just a quick thing about prices, you know, like the 50 Phantoms watch that I just got, right? I just went to Chrono 24. There are three listings. One of them is the one that just came out, I think, the 50 Phantoms Blue for $2,200 Canadian dollars.
Yikes.
Like, see, that's gouging. They're all above 50. Shit. Yeah, that's But look, that's, I mean, free market economy. That's how it works. If there's demand, people, if people can benefit, they can sell. So
also, I wanted to read something here in the case. And this is important. This is from the case itself. Hermès is the exclusive distributor or licensor in the United States of its merchandise. Secondly, there's your monopoly. And Hermès sells its products direct to customers through Hermès-owned retail stores, except for Birkin bags, through its website. So they sell things through their website, except for the Birkin bags. Hermès currently operates approximately 43 retail stores in the United States. So I think that's where the definition of this monopoly is. But I think they have to prove bundling. I think bundling is going to be the big, is the big thing here. They bring you into this private room, see if you're worthy. It's, yeah, it's intense. All right. Let's see. Cavalieri v. Hermès. Let's see how that turns out. What do you want to go? Do you want to go somewhere next? Do you want me to go into the news, some releases? So the 70th anniversary of the Blancpain was in 2023, coming out after 1953. We noticed from those releases, the core collection had remained unchanged. They came out with, they still felt, I think, in the last couple of years that they were still stuck in the early 2000s where large watches were all the craze. Think of Panerai. And now what they've come out with is a change to their main line. This now is the Blancpain 50 Fathoms, the 5010, now in 40 millimeters, 42 millimeters of diameter, much closer to the Spinnaker that you're wearing now, as opposed to the 44 millimeter of their regular line, Blancpain 50 Fathoms. How's this for a competitor to the Rolex Submariner? It definitely is not, because this watch is, I think, better in a lot of ways. It's the high horology that comes out of it. It should be competing with the likes of, I would say, the heavy hitters, the GPs, the Chopals of the world.
Chopal.
In their 70th anniversary, they come out with some, an extreme watch, a tech version, a bronze, gold, precious metal, moisture indicator. They had a 70th anniversary resembling their common model, but nothing to indicate what came out now in 2024. This one is the same as the 5015. The date is a little closer to the outer seconds track. The movement remains identical with a silicone hairspring. The rotor has a new design. Three barrel, 120 hour, 35 joules, adjusted to six positions, 300 meters of water resistance. This is a high horology piece. It is expensive. It's $19,300 on the full bracelet. We're talking about titanium here.
US?
Yes.
Is it?
Oh, so you're going to probably be able to get it at a little bit less than that in Canadian after all said and done when you negotiate and you wait a little bit. So again, like I was saying, this isn't a competitor to the Submariner. This should be more of a competitor to the AP Royal Rogue Offshore Diver. The level of finish on this watch is crazy. So I'm a very big fan. This may be the Blancpain 50 Fathom that everyone who was hesitant about the 44 millimeter one, this is the one for you, because it is just like that 44 millimeter one in 42 millimeters with a full titanium case and bracelet. That's the same size as this Seiko Diver. Kudos to Blancpain. They need to come up with more of this stuff, but I'm a big fan of this release. Good on them. Probably the one they should have released last year for the 70th anniversary, a new 42 millimeter, but yeah.
Very nice. I didn't know it was 44. Sorry. I thought there was already a smaller version of the 50 Fathoms.
Maybe you're thinking of the Aquascaf.
Maybe.
The Aquascaf, not the 50 Fathoms, but the Aquascaf did have a 38 millimeters and a 43 millimeters. But that's a different line of the Blancpain 50 Fathoms, this the Aquascaf. So it's a little bit different.
Yeah, it's a cool release. The size obviously is better. It makes it more accessible for people with smaller wrists. The one that I have is a 42 as well, the Spinnaker. Yeah. So I kind of...
sit 42 like is a that, good size. Much more.
Yeah, but I think maybe this, I don't know, let's say the case shape of the Blancpain is more intricate. The lugs are a bit shorter, so it might sit more comfortably. Excellent, expensive, but yeah, definitely it's one of the best. It's one of the best diver watches ever, and you know, arguably the first one. One of the oldest brands also. Not in continuous existence, but overall, the start date is the oldest brand in the world. I think Vacheron is the one that's in continuous
also existence. Also, fun fact, Blancpain is one of the only brands that never, ever had a quartz movement in its collection, ever, through its history.
And that's why they're not in continuous.
Yeah, probably.
What do you got for us next, Dimitri? Take us somewhere else.
All right, let's go to space.
Space! You
know, again, once again, as usual. So I'm sure this everybody's already read the news. This, just about a week ago, Omega has announced, or Swatch has announced, another collaboration, another Moonswatch. This time it's the Snoopy. It's called officially the Moonswatch Snoopy Mission to the Moon Phase. It's an all-white watch that's kind of giving an homage to Snoopy, which is the character used on some of the Omegas already. But more importantly, this is a character that's used for NASA. And I think given for free by the creator of Snoopy. And it's in the form of an award to NASA, not necessarily astronauts, but it's the employees of NASA that for their achievements or extraordinary achievements in spaceflight. We did an episode on Omega probably many times, and one of the specific episodes about space watches, we went into depth of, let's say, what the origins of Snoopy. And I think it's very cool. Some of the, I would say most of the Snoopy editions from Omega Speedmaster are extremely popular and very hard to get.
Hmm.
And it's a cool little, I wouldn't even call it a gimmick, it's a nice little kind of thing they have going on with Snoopy, because it does represent something of high value when it comes to NASA employees, and it's usually well executed on the Speedmasters. So now the Swatch did a moon phase Snoopy mission to moon phase watch. It's all white, again, in that bioceramic, which just, you know, reads as plastic, with, let's say, different little things on the dial and on the back case in showing Snoopy. It's, I think, announced on the 21st in London and became officially available in boutiques and selected boutiques, actually, on the 26th. It features the all-white bioceramic case, dial, and Velcro strap, just like the other Moonswatches, and inspired by the Snoopy mascot, and by Charles Schulz, who's the, let's say, the creator of Snoopy. It maintains the same case, 42 millimeters, introduces the moon phase function, which is a very rare thing apparently for Swatch watches.
Mm-hmm.
The moon phase is adjustable via the crown and the push button at 4 o'clock. Notably, the moon phase indicator showcasing a sleeping Snoopy on the moon. It comes with like a special UV reactive feature. It displays the text, "I can't sleep without a nightlight," which is written in that little subdial. I think it's very cool. It's, again, it's another edition. I'll be honest, it's expensive. It's $310. I think we've covered this before, for just in general, for that kind of a watch, that price is a lot. But I think it's my favorite Moonswatch.
I agree. I think it's right in time for summer. I like the UV light that picks up by saying, "Hey, I can't sleep without a light on," or something like that. That's what I think he used to say, Snoopy. Of course, anyone who wants a very affordable white side to the moon, this is the watch for you, obviously, although it's not the same. I am a big fan of ceramic in general. This is bioceramic, but if I could get an IWC Pilot Lake Tahoe, white side of the moon, you know, if Tudor Black Bay came out with that ceramic diver, but in white, oh, it'd be very dope.
One more interesting thing to mention, and I was reading Fratello, because Swatch claimed that initially, since releasing the Moonswatches, it boosted the sales of actual Moonwatch of the Speedmaster by like 50% or something like that. So Fratello actually went out of their way and went to Chrono 24 and asked them to kind of confirm whether that's true or not. Chrono 24 responded to saying that the sales of Moonswatches or transactions went up by 40%.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy.
Yeah.
No, it's been a huge driver for them, and they're milking this for as much as they can. Well, my prediction is going to be the Swatch, the C-Swatch, which is going to be the diver from Omega in a Swatch version.
The Seamaster, yeah.
Yeah, that'll be the next one, I think. They're going to come back.
This one is nicely executed. It doesn't look funny. It doesn't look like a toy watch. This one looks nice. This was clean and well executed.
Still wouldn't buy, but yeah, very nice.
No, I'm not going to buy it.
All right, what's next? Let me jump into one here. And tell me if you were going to talk about it. I want to make sure. Were you going to talk about this new Tudor?
The pink one. Tudor unveiled the pink dial black bay chronograph as the right before the Watches and Wonders that are basically starting in like 2 weeks. I'm excited can't wait. That. I really want to see. I'm like going to the website hoping that maybe there's going to be like some announcements before, but no, it's not one of those. It features a unique pink dial. This watch diverges from the traditional black and white models that they have with chronographs. It offers like a, I would say, I mean, the best way to describe it is a lighthearted and bold aesthetic. The choice of colors acknowledged as polarizing for sure.
But don't guys look at this watch because the pink isn't like this hot, bright pink. It has this almost like a little bit of a violet or purple hue to it. So it's a little bit matte. It's not too flashy, but it brings color.
Yeah. So the pink hue aligns with the signature color of the Taiwanese singer and tour ambassador, Jay Chu. I'm hoping I pronounced that right. So it's
ambassador? It's yeah, that's how you pronounce it.
Jay Chu. That's what I was curious
about.
So
you meant the word ambassador.
So potentially maybe there's a collaboration coming up or something like that. Maybe it's one of the firsts. So
yeah, but what's interesting here, this Tudor is also partnered with Inter Miami. And
that could be also a connection because
that's the color of their uniforms.
Yes, yeah, it could be that could be a connection, but officially it is that it is the Jay Chu's let's say inspiration.
No, I agree, but it's also the official watch. Tudor is also the official partner of Inter Miami.
Yeah, same specs as the regular Black Bay Chrono versions. The only difference is that now this watch comes on a five link bracelet, which we're not supposed to call Jubilee, but it is.
I'll call it. Rolex send me letters telling me to stop.
Yeah, send me. Season desist. Yeah. So I love the bracelet. I honestly, like just for that they started putting that bracelet on the chronographs, I think it's amazing. Anybody who cannot get their hands on or can't afford a Daytona, go for this.
Yeah.
With that bracelet. It's gorgeous.
I love this watch, but in the white dial, but this is just a great, you know, the chronograph. I'd love to see them do more colors with this chronograph model.
For me, this watch in the white dial on the five link bracelet would be
killer. That's a Daytona one.
I think this is a limited edition.
This is going to be very limited, yes.
And price is 5,600 euros.
But dare I say, it's fine. And dare I say, it's going to be interesting to see what Tudor comes out with. Watches and Wonders, they're probably going to have different iterations to this chronograph. Maybe, like you just said, the black and white that's already part of the catalog gets a five-link bracelet option that they've been putting on the other black base. Diving chronographs, we want to do an episode on that one. This is a great one. Definitely up there. 200 meters
water. Definitely diving. 200 meters, yeah.
Yeah, it's made for diving. And
The only thing I don't like, and that's not this specific model, it's just the chronographs. I don't like that date window at 6 o'clock. It looks like an afterthought to me. I'm not a big fan.
Yeah. I've seen it. I think it was well executed. Nice stepped cutout. I agree what I would have done. I think they wanted it to be legible. I would have probably made it, say, on this watch, say, make the date window black, just like the registers. That's what I would have done. Probably would stick out too much or make it pink altogether.
Yeah.
So you barely see it and really blends into the dial.
Yeah, that could be cool. Yeah, I'm always, when it comes to date windows, I always prefer, if you are putting a date window, make sure it's a big piece. There's a lot of design behind it, right?
Unless you're Zen and you're following some DIN or ISO certification from NASA.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. But then there's a reason, right?
Of course.
For that.
Very, very nice. Yeah. We'll see where they come out. Very excited to see what they have in store for us at Watches and Wonders. Really, really excited for Watches and Wonders. My favorite is still Bremont. Oh, I cannot wait to see what Bremont releases. They're going to release their new first Davide Serrato affordable watch. It's going to be like $2,700. It's a field watch, I think, that they said. It's going to be a field watch. So,
dude, if they update the Seamaster 300M line,
you're buy it. Yeah.
With the new bracelet, oof.
The other one you had on your list as well. I think you had the Christopher Ward. Talk about that one. That one was great.
Yeah.
Go for it.
That one is great. Yeah. Beautiful.
Give the
watch.
People so, what they want, Dimitri. Talk to us about that.
Yes. Yes. So the chrono.
Don't say like that. Oh my gosh. You're ruining the mood. Yes. Do you like this?
You know what I'm thinking of? I was thinking of, what's the emperor in Star Wars? I was like, yes, join, come to the dark side.
Laughing.
When she's like, when he's like shooting electricity out of his fingers. It's like, yes.
Oh yeah, that's great.
Christopher Ward, the brand that we all love, the one that I didn't like specifically for the logos, like lately they've been killing it with the Belcanto, with the 12.
Yeah.
So now they did a latest edition. This is a C63 Valour chronograph. It celebrates all three branches of the military, making it the first chronograph Making it the first in Christopher Wars collection. Inspired by the British military quartz watches from the 80s, this watch features polished numerals and applied logo and stand out against the classic black dial for superior legibility. In terms of, and I would suggest anybody listening to go and look for reviews with like high quality pictures, the build quality of this thing is amazing. Like looking at the dial, it's amazing.
And for the most part, Christopher Ward is that. Their whole premise, and let's say if people may not know them, or they do, they're one of the, they've been around now, I think, for 10 years? 10 years, or no, more than that. I think it was 2010 they started, I think. So they're in there like,
because they were, I think, was before,
15
no?
or 20 demo. Years. They're up there. And they're, guys, they're not a micro brand anymore. They're from Great Britain. They are run now by a gentleman, Mike France. I think Christopher Ward, who opened it, is no longer with them. They've gone through new logos. They've come out with incredible watchmaking in general, but their main premise is to come out with like bang for buck. That's what they're very well known for. Yeah. And they do a lot of military inspired or very, they do a lot of links to the military in a lot of their watches, but they have some very great ones. And they're very, I keep saying very, they are very open. When they're even saying like the 12, when you go to Christopher's Ward website, they say, yeah, this is inspired by Gerald Genta's design. They're not trying to make it off like there's like, yeah, this is what inspired us. They went and got the guy who designed it for the Antarctique. But this one is talking about, you're saying the Valor chronograph. It's a military watch. And this one's paying tribute to the British military.
Oh, yeah, that's the English way of writing Valor. Yeah.
Valor.
It's true, with a U. Yeah. I thought of like an American with Valor.
Yeah, yeah, the color we say with a U, the British. So the Canadians, yeah. Yeah. But this one is a beautiful, and it's a chronometer watch. Talk to us about that.
I looked it up before, by the way. So they started in 2004, so it's been 20 years.
Yeah.
I just did the math in my head. Actually, not 20, I use a calculator. Three guys, Christopher Ward, Mike France, and Peter Ellis were the people behind it at the beginning. So this one, back to this watch. The case back honors the three branches of the military with their, I think, crests. Itself, the watch is 39 millimeters in stainless steel, like the Lacus 45.8. It has a quartz watch. It's a battery-powered movement with a three-year lifespan, accuracy to plus minus 10 seconds a year, which is crazy.
Yeah, so it's not just a quartz movement. It's a chronometer quartz movement.
150 meters of water resistance. I think it's available on a five-link bracelet or leather strap. And it's priced at $600.
But of course, you guys, you get it on the bracelet. Get yourself an Artem strap for this afterwards, some kind of sailcloth. Get it on the bracelet. The bracelet is this beautiful five-link thing, kind of like they have it on their other line. I think it's called, they have a five-link and they have another one. I think it's like a three-link design, kind of like Oyster kind of style, but it's like a three-link. They have a three-link and a five-link. I see that. And then they have the strap. So for $790 on the bracelet, this is like 150 meter. You don't touch the battery for 10 years. Chronometer grade. Chronograph, very close to go anywhere and do anything. Maybe unless you're wearing a suit all day, this thing looks really good. Subdial contrast, the different colors on those seconds register, or there's the hands for those for the registers. Lastly, love it. No date. Oh, looks good with no date.
$1,000 Canadian, or $600 or $750, depending on what you choose with for the bracelet. Like. It's amazing, amazing.
Love this.
And
love this.
Again, like I just mentioned before, anybody interested in this watch, go find an article from a watch company like to see like high quality zooms or close-ups of the dial. It is so well done, so well executed. It's beautiful.
Yeah. Oh, a little uninspiring. Really need to see what Breitling's going to do because they just released a new bunch of Navitimers that are all 41 millimeters. They have GMTs, automatic 41s, but they brought back the Cosmonaut. The Cosmonaut is actually quite interesting. This is the one that houses a B12 movement. So essentially, you're looking at a 24-hour dial. What that means is that the hour hand rotates the whole dial every 24 hours as opposed to every 12 hours. So in 2022, they had the 60th anniversary Cosmonaut. This is an automatic. I think the other one had a manually wound caliber, the B02. But this is just a stunning Navi timer, 24-hour dial, very limited. And I think it's actually very expensive, but it's one of 250. So it's very limited, as we said, and it's a precious metal 18-karat red gold case. So it's just a very, very well-executed watch on that front. But then there's also, after the Cosmonaut, there is a bunch of 41-millimeter Navi timers. A little bit better than the last Navi timers that kind of made no sense from, I think, George Kern, or maybe they were there before George Kern took over. These ones are a little bit more modern. They don't have the, they have a little bit of the view of the slide rule bezel, but they're not chronograph watches. So these are a little bit more modern. They have very elegant style to it from as a pilot's watch, and they come on a, either a leather strap or a five-link bracelet with a GMT complication and a date at the 6 o'clock. They come in the traditional colors, green, blue, light blue, kind of like this two-tone that you can find. They are actually quite nice, I would say, as they take pictures. But I mean, if you're going to get a Breitling Navi timer, you should get the one that is the proper chronograph. But then again, they need to come out with a better size for that chronograph, because I think the chronograph right now is only at 43 millimeters and this one's at 41. But yeah, and with the price spike from Breitling, it puts a lot into question whether these watches are for you, because they are not cheap. They are not cheap at all. Like, to give you an idea, the automatic 41 in steel is about 4,500 pounds. So you look about 7K, or a little bit between 6.5 and 7K. It's a lot of cashish, a lot of cashish. Anyway, I think it's a miss. Navi timers need a chronograph complication to me. This one's a GMT.
Yeah, I don't disagree. There's a lot of, I feel like the Navi timers are kind of almost doing the same thing as the Speedmasters. There's just so many different versions, so many different colors and sizes, and I get lost. I agree with you. I like the, I'm not a big fan of just different color variations in general, but I like the classic, like, give me a navy, give me a white, give me a black Navi timer.
Yeah.
And I agree that I think they work better as chronographs, not GMTs.
Yeah.
Because for the GMT, it's a clean dial, but they make it busy with the bezel and all of the markings. I don't know.
Well, the slide rule has function. The slide rule has function even without the chronograph. You don't need a chronograph to have the slide rule. I get it. You can do your mathematical calculations as you're flying your plane, you know, or say it that way. But I just find it's like, just put the chronograph in there. And that would have been a win, I think, at 41. No bueno for me from Breitling on this one. I'm looking forward to Watches and Wonders. Let's see what they got.
Yeah. Okay. There's another one that I have is the Aquastar release.
Oh yeah, talk about that. That's fucking dope. I just read it.
So they have a resurgence since around 2020, releasing a bunch of, let's say, pretty popular, I said, admired watches such as Deepstar, Deepstar 2, Series 60.
What's funny is that you don't remember meeting at Windup. We met the owner, the founder. Well, sorry.
Maybe I wasn't around.
I don't know if you were with me at the time. I actually think you were getting beer. It says a lot about you, Dimitri. Congrats. I hope the kids are listening. Dimitri was off drinking himself in a corner, trying to forget his life. But we crossed paths with an older gentleman, and I'm like, oh, that's a nice Aquastar, because they have chronographs.
He's like, I am Aquastar. And he goes, Mike Aquastar.
Yeah.
Do you know who you're talking to?
and he goes, my son is the one who because it's a zombie brand, right? He goes, he's the one who brought this back to life. I was like, that's dope.
Brains.
All right, so talk to us. Sorry.
All right. So Aquastar. It's a brand that, like you mentioned, was revived. They're a zombie brand. Now they're under the leadership of Rick Murray. He's been focused on paying homage to historic dive watches. This new edition is called the Bentos 500 Chronograph. It's a modern homage to the original 1970s model, which has a new exclusive movement, especially designed for this watch, and its improved wearability. It's an original 42mm diameter, 47mm in length. It's 15, it's quite big, it's a big boy, 13.4mm in thickness, 22 lug to lug. It introduces a unique automatic monopusher chronograph movement with a caliber 1 MPS, which is developed over 3 years in collaboration with La Jupere, featuring 60 hours of power reserve, underwater operable chronograph pusher, which is pretty cool, a distinctive central 60-minute counter. It's faithful to its original 1970s design, semi-glossy dial. It's very, very robust. Like, it's very utilitary looking. It's very, I would say, like, it makes me think of, like, Doxa almost. $2,700 US, I think. This is a pre-order price. If it, after that, I think we can go up to $3,790. Initially, limited to 300 units.
That's the Founders Edition. This thing is awesome. And as a bonus, you get a signed copy of Jason Heaton's novel, Sweetwater. This thing is incredible. I mean, think about it. You get an Isofrane rubber strap. And I mean, those are made for professional. If people don't know Isofrane, look them up. They're made in Italy. They are owned by a company called Synchron, which kind of makes something that looks a lot like the Doxa Army. They used to make the same kind of watch. So they also own Isofrane. It also has, there. You can also get, by the way, there'll be a special price. You can get a beads of rice bracelet for this watch. You were saying thick. I think this is exactly what it should be at. 15.4 millimeters. It is thick, but it's 42 millimeters. You're looking at a chronograph that can be engaged underwater. That's fucking awesome.
It is. Pusher. It is awesome. But
that
I mean,
is very cool.
I say thick because I don't see what is in there that makes it requires for it to be so thick. Meaning, it's 200 meters, right? It's not 600 meters. Oh, five, sorry, 500 meters.
But it's a 200 meter automatic chronograph. That's probably it. You got to put a rotor in there. You got a whole chronograph movement. It's got to be thick. That's why.
Sure. Maybe the chronograph probably is the reason why it is like this, because, you know, comparing to like the other releases from the Omega Planet Ocean, which are 600 meters of water resistance, they're just the 16.2. So they're like half a centimeter thicker.
Now, I'm a fan of Aquastar. I was a fan ever since they came out in 2022 with the Aquastar Deep Star, which is like a 39 millimeter chronograph. It's like this like big dial or this big eye, a 30 minute register while the second hand is on the 9 o'clock. That's a 200 meter one and it has like a decompression bezel. That one is just really, really nice. And they limit it to like a few hundred pieces a year. Big fan of that watch in general as an overall diver.
There's a brand itself. We've talked about them quite a bit in releases in the past. They're amazing. One thing I'm curious, and I'm here, I want to kind of hear what you think. The warranty on this watch is only 1 year. Why is that? Just because of the new movement?
I don't know. You know, that's a good point. That's a good point. That's
because if that's a custom movement, that's not a lot of people could repair it. You probably have to send it back to Aquastar. And
well, it's custom, I think, in terms of, I think it's a Le Jouperet base. So I think there's a module that they add on top that can see if they can, if someone can work on it. I mean, it's not, shouldn't be too complicated. So I guess a competent watchmaker could service it.
Yeah.
But I agree. I think you're absolutely right that that's something to keep in mind. However, I mean, if it doesn't break down within the first year, you're probably in the clear, but teach their own. But
just,
I agree.
Just don't give
a little
Carl,
bit of a downer.
Because he'll find a way to break
exactly.
it down.
Exactly. Yeah. He'll find a way to break it. Oh, my yay. Good.
What else?
Absolutely.
You want to do one
very,
more?
Very nice watch. Do one more.
No,
what
no,
we got here?
You do one
what
more.
What do the people want to hear? Oh, I'll talk about here. Fears. Fears came out with a new Redcliffe. Sports
okay, let's
watch.
Do that. Let's do that.
Kind of like sports watch. Kind of like a Gata watch.
Yeah, let's do that.
They've like come out with a limited production Onyx dial. They came out with the Redcliffe collection. So the Redcliffe collection initially was one of their original collections. They actually had quartz versions of this very watch. But now they've come out with a very straightforward circular case and now with a mechanical movement. A watch that is, do it dare, call it a Gata, 39.5 millimeters in diameter, 9.9 millimeters tall, a nice brush, polished finish, mid-case that's polished, sloping bezel, oversized crown, kind of like goes everywhere, 150 meter water resistance. You see where I'm going here, guys? Think of Aquaterra. Not very flashy. The crown is big. I'm going to say this. The crown is big on this one. It looks big. I didn't measure it, but it looks big. This watch comes obviously in with the finish that Fears offers in their watch, so very nice attention to details. There are a few dial variants. They have something called cherry red, pewter gray, raven black, mallard green. I think I'm a fan of the green. I think it looks really, really good because it's not too big and bright. Comes with those Fears syringe hands. It's like they have a very special symbol to them. The dates window in this one, I think, is one that you'll appreciate because they didn't just think of it as a sub last minute thought because of the fact it does always mix with the, they have different colors depending on the dial. This one has a La Jouqueret G100 caliber. So it's a shift from the ETAs that they normally have had in their Brunswick watches. So this is just a typical, it has a quick set date, 60-hour power reserve. They're regulated though. So these ones are 0 to 5 seconds a day, which is good. And also, bracelet. this has a bracelet. Most Fears watches don't come on bracelets. They've been coming on leather straps in the Brunswicks, but they also have a version of their, they called it the Sports Brunswick or something of that nature. They had a sports bracelet watch that had like 100 meters of water resistance, where Nicholas Bowman's cargo says, well, it's not really for a sports watch. It's just one that is more sporty as opposed to the understated elegance of their other collection line. My favorite is the, as I was talking about the green one, but that Onyx dial that is limited within this one. Ooh, that's a nice good looking dress watch, I have to say. It also comes on the bracelet. So they're nice looking watches. Let me see here if I can give you a price. Maybe I will make people go, what? They're 2,600, 2,700 pounds, excluding VAT. So not cheap.
Not cheap.
But for Gada watch, for something that is elegantly understated and very British.
British.
A really great brand and a really nice guy. British. Very nice watches from Fears. I like that they're expanding. Last thing I'll say, I like there's only four colors. He keeps it tight, very thoughtful in what he does. Doesn't just make a million variations of everything. They're very, very thoughtful in what they want to deliver. What do you think?
I like it. The crown does stand out. It's a bit, I think, disproportional. But again, I think you have to see that in person as usual. Maybe it will change your opinion on the pictures. It kind of looks like it's a little bit too big. I like it. It's a very elegant, understated, let's say, classy looking watch. Price, not sure. Because, you know, as you were talking about the specs, all I was kept thinking about was the Thomas van Straten's VPC,
mm-hmm.
right? Which is cheaper and to me is, let's say, much nicer. Much, much nicer.
Yeah. And I think it would spend a little bit more amazing. At 3,000 pounds and get the Brunswick with the steel bracelet. The Brunswick 40.
Yeah.
I think I would do that more. That one is a little bit, not more charisma or personality, but it's the one I like. And it's the ETA movements. I would get the Brunswick 40 that comes with the bracelet probably as an option versus this one, because I think it just has a little bit more panache or a little bit more, I would say, I don't know. It just has a, these ones are very simple and they're very elegant. I'm sure they're very well finished. But when you're getting up to $4,000, you can get a lot of watch at $4,000.
Yeah.
I think even on the gray market, you can get an Omega Deville on a bracelet.
I'm honestly not connecting very much with this watch. I think of Fears as like historical recreations of watches that they have a lot of vintage inspired stuff. And this one doesn't have that vintage aspect at all to me.
Right. Which is a good try. I'm glad that they're trying other things, but you know, going with a Gada watch, it can be a little, I think it's a little bit, it's understated, but it wasn't like a big home run for me. I agree. Excellent. All right.
I think at this point we've gone through a lot. It's already over an hour.
End of content. End of content. No, but guys, thank you for tuning in. That was a really fun episode. We will talk next week. Watches and Wonders right around the corner. Be well, everyone, and we'll see you on the next episode.
Cheers, everybody.
Thank you for joining us this week. We hope you enjoyed the show. If you like our podcast, please make sure to like and subscribe. You can find us on Instagram at Big Black Clock Watch and through email at info@bigblackclock.watch. Happy hunting, and we will see you on the next episode.